Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
Welcome to Business Lives by Vox Markets, the podcast that brings you closer to the people who shape the world of business. We give you an insight into the lives of the individuals who stand out from the crowd. For updates on the latest episodes, please subscribe to our channel.
Good morning and welcome to the Business Lives podcast. Today on the podcast, we have Aaron Gelbard, who is the CEO and founder of the UK's second fastest growing company. Welcome to the show, Aaron.
Thanks for having me.
So how are you today?
Very well, how are you?
Great, I think today is a good opportunity to hear about your background as well as the company background, Bloom & Wild. But why don't you just start by telling us a bit of an intro about yourself?
Sure, I grew up in France and then moved to London when I was 5 with my mum. And I guess as an only child moving to a new country, you're always trying to sort of fit in and get positive feedback from people, and that became relevant later on. So after university, I went into management consulting. I did that for a few years with an MBA in the middle, and I worked mainly with retail consumer products and tech clients, and was busy trying to get good feedback from my bosses as a consultant. And then after a while, I guess I wanted to become an entrepreneur. My dad's an entrepreneur. Both my granddads were entrepreneurs, and I thought I'd be motivated by getting that positive feedback and reinforcement that I've always craved from real customers and not just from my managers. And that was a big part of what pushed me in the direction of Bloom & Wild.
I think when you say that you went and got a university degree and an MBA, you didn't really name drop Oxford and Harvard Business School. I mean, they're very prestigious places to go get your degrees from as well.
Thank you. Yeah, it was a great experience to get to go to both. I learned a lot. I think in particular my MBA just sort of made me understand a bit more about what it would be like to actually be running a business. I think as a consultant, you learn a lot about how to solve quite specific problems, but it was really useful to get to study alongside people who've done all sorts of other types of jobs, people who'd started their own companies or invested in other companies, and that definitely helped.
So going from the consultancy side, you obviously have gone to go work for yourself. How did you find that transition?
To begin with, it's really tough. Working consulting is hard, but working for yourself is even harder. I'd also got to the point where I had a reasonably large team who would work alongside me and help me get stuff done. I had an assistant, I had my own office, so there was quite a lot of comfort at the stage I was at in consulting. And then I went to with my business partner having to do everything for myself. And it's really hard work. There's always more stuff than you're able to do. Consulting firms also operate in quite a perfectionist way, and you spend a lot of time trying to sort of perfect that final 1% and read back over a PowerPoint presentation for the fourth or fifth time to make sure that absolutely everything's perfect in it. And moving to being an entrepreneur, you just have to be so much more scrappy. If you can do a quarter of your to-do list that you've planned for the day, then that's progress. So there's definitely no time to go over anything again. So that was a big adjustment.
How did you come up with the idea of posting flowers through a letterbox? Maybe for people that may not have heard Bloom & Wild. I actually was cycling in this morning and saw a few of your vans driving around. But for people that haven't heard of Bloom & Wild, just give us a quick synopsis about what it is.
Bloom & Wild's trying to make sending and receiving flowers the joy that it should be. On the sending side, we make it super easy for you to place an order, especially on your mobile phone, in well under a minute, be that on our website or app. And then from a delivery perspective, we source flowers direct from growers, so they're really fresh and not too expensive. And then we post them through people's letterboxes all over the UK and now also in Germany, France and Ireland.
Oh, wow. So how did you come up with the idea of that?
I guess a few things. I'd been a sender of flowers online a few times myself. I'd always found it quite a tricky experience. It was often quite expensive. I was never really sure what company to order from, whether the person would be in, whether the flowers that I ordered would be the flowers that actually showed up, whether the recipient would like them, whether they'd last a long time. So it felt like there were lots of other industries where people were coming up with using technology and creating brands with good supply chains that were creating really positive customer experiences. And it didn't feel like anybody had done that in the flower industry. Separately, I was also a customer of a company called Graze, which does snacks through the letterbox. I thought what they did was really cool. I know the guy that runs it from university, and so I'd always kept in touch a little bit with what they were doing behind the scenes, and I thought that was really interesting. And it made me wonder whether letterbox delivery might solve some of the problems of the flower industry, because it would mean that people wouldn't need to be in to receive their deliveries. They wouldn't need to go and collect them from sorting offices. That would mean that the flowers would arrive fresher and have a quicker journey to the end customer.
I mean, you have chosen possibly one of the most delicate and perishable items to post through a letterbox. How did you, there must have been a lot of thought gone into the actual process of posting a bunch of flowers through the letterbox.
Yeah, a huge amount of hard work went into it, and lots of mistakes, I should say. We got our initial packaging wrong, which meant that we, for example, one of the early versions of our packaging didn't have sufficient ventilation and some of the flowers were ending up moldy and we weren't sure why. We have developed a special netting that goes around the heads of flowers to protect and compress them in transit, which is like a mini version of the sort of net you put around a Christmas tree if you were to take it home in your car. And that's really helped with transport. We have got an extensive testing program to qualify flowers for inclusion in our bouquets. So everything needs to be transit tested in various heat conditions for various lengths of time to make sure that it will arrive in good condition, not drooping, not bruised, etc. So a lot of work does go into it behind the scenes.
Okay, so the business grew very quick. You've got your idea. You briefly mentioned the testing, which obviously came a little bit later, but how did you start from the initial concept to actually starting the business? Where did you get your first customers from? How did the company grow in that way?
So to get started, I guess we were doing it off our own savings, so we were quite scrappy about doing the minimum we could to get something over the line. So we found some people who'd help build us a website for not too much money, probably too little money in hindsight. We found a supplier of flowers. We found a supplier of packaging. We did some really basic branding, had somebody help us out on that, incorporated the company, got set up with banking and payments, and that was sort of it, really. And then we got going. Initially, we asked all our friends to order for us and give them big discounts, so we weren't making very much money. And then we asked them to tell their friends about it. We'd also tried to build buzz about it by handing out free flowers in what we considered to be premium locations, so High Street, Kensington, Notting Hill, places like that. And we gave people a free individual stem in return for their email address. And then we sent them an email telling them about our service when we'd launched. We got some customers like that. That got us some PR because we ended up giving flowers to a journalist who happened to work for the Daily Mail, which we didn't realise just outside High Street, Ken Tube Station. So then we got our first piece of press coverage. And I guess it sort of all started from there. One thing that we invested in really early on, which we continue to do until now, is a refer-a-friend scheme where people would get money off their next order for referring a friend who went on to place an order. And that sort of helped people find out about the product. I guess, finally, and this remains really important until now, flowers are a really viral product because almost all of our flowers are given as a gift. Mm-hmm. So actually about a quarter of our customers, we did a recent survey on this, discovered Bloom and Wild by having previously been a recipient of Bloom and Wild. So really investing in the quality of our product such that people who receive it go on to become customers is really important to our growth.
So what is the competition in the area like? I know that there are a lot of stores that do deliver flowers, but are there any that deliver them in the way that you do?
So a number of other online flower companies now offer letterbox flowers as well. I guess people have seen us doing it and think that it must be working, and so they're doing it as well. I guess for us, although we do offer traditional hand-tied bouquets, letterbox flowers really is our focus. It's the vast majority of the orders that we do each week. And so whereas for a number of other companies, they will have a few letterbox bouquets alongside their main range. And I always think you do a better job of something when it's your focus than when it's an afterthought. And so we have seen other companies come up with letterbox flowers, but we haven't seen that really sort of dent our growth or the positive feedback we get from our customers on the product.
Okay, and you briefly mentioned the start and that you were doing it all on a bit of a shoestring. Was there any point where you actually had to run around the city and raise money?
Unfortunately, we haven't been able to get profitable just with the with our own savings. We didn't have that much. So yes, we have had to run around raising money. We've done it a few times. We initially did it from angel investors in our networks, I guess having both worked in sort of like business financy type jobs. And then we've raised two rounds of venture capital investment, one led by a firm called MMC Ventures, who have been really supportive. They've also backed a couple of other similar businesses to us, like Gusto and Pat Coffee. And then another round from a German venture capital investor called Berder Principal Investments that's also backed a number of similar businesses, including in the UK, Not on the High Street, who also are sort of very active in the gifting space. So they've both brought really relevant experience. We expanded into Germany last year, and actually Berder have been really helpful with their network connections, introductions over there.
So the companies, obviously, you have elements of technology. You've got your mobile app and you've got the website, and that must have aided the growth. I've got a stat here that you're the second fastest growing company in the UK. And like I had to clarify it before we started, just to double check it was right, at 13,000%. That must have been crazy to deal with that growth.
Yeah, it has been crazy. We have grown incredibly quickly. I guess what we've tried to do is balance really fast growth with sort of having one eye on growing sustainably and always being one step from being profitable. So we have raised £7 million to achieve that, but other companies raise hundreds of millions of pounds to achieve that. And I think when you do that, you then are encouraged to spend through all of that money really quickly and then just go out and raise more and more. And I've always wanted to be really fast growing, but also have our unit economics under control, be in a position where we can become profitable over the next couple of months at any point if we, you know, choose to be or need to be for whatever reason. And that balance has been really important. Technology is really central to what we do. I think when we started, we underinvested in technology. I mentioned that we probably spent a little less of our savings on the initial website than we should have done. But we see ourselves as a technology company just as much as we see ourselves a flower company. And about a quarter of our team work in software engineering. We see that as a source of competitive advantage. We're constantly trying to improve conversion rate, improve efficiency of our operations behind the scenes, and automate as many processes as possible to reduce error rate, make things more reliable. And that's been really important to our growth.
How does the company source the flowers? Do you have different florists around? How does the actual logistics side of it work?
We don't source from florists. This is important. We source our flowers direct from growers. Okay. When you source from a florist, that florist is often step four or five in a supply chain because they'll be a small business, so they won't be able to source flowers direct from growers themselves. They'll have to source from a wholesaler or an auction. And so the flowers will have gone through a few steps before getting to that florist and then another step to the end customer. If you source direct from flower growers, then the flowers don't go through as many middlemen. There are a few benefits of this. They're less expensive because you haven't had to sort of pay for lots of people along the chain to earn a living, which is good for customers. They last longer because they haven't been handled by lots of people. And they also create less waste, which is good for the environment, because at each step that flowers get handled, some of them get wasted because of mishandling or whatever else. So, and actually, it's not just flower waste, it's also packaging waste from unpacking flowers, repacking them into new formats, etc. So it's really important that we do source direct from growers, and that's been a big part of our advantage.
And that's always been the business model of yours. Yeah. Okay, very interesting. So it sounds the company seems to have, I guess, blossomed, pardon the pun, to absolute perfection so far. There must have been some hiccups on the way.
Loads of hiccups. I mentioned when we started, we didn't sufficiently understand the importance of having ventilation in our packaging.
Yes.
We actually were buying prototype boxes to begin with for our early trials, and they were costing us £30 a box, which is really expensive just for a box. That's more than we charge now for an average bunch of flowers with everything in it. And so we spoke to our supplier and asked whether he could do it any cheaper. And he said, well, if you buy 1,000 of the boxes, then I can do them for £2.70 a box. And we thought, well, that's much better than £30, and surely we must have had the box design right by now. So we spent £2,700 of our savings on buying these 1,000 boxes to stop paying 30 quid a box. And then the first batch of trial boxes we sent out with this new format were the ones where we found out that the flowers were mouldy, and we actually had to basically throw away 980 of these 1,000 boxes. So it was a really expensive mistake. And I think we tried to sort of run before we could walk a little bit, and were too focused on trying to like optimize the business early on rather than accepting that we're in a test and learn phase. And actually that proved to be much more expensive than buying the £30 prototypes that we'd been buying previously. And there are a few examples like that where we've, I guess we've tried to get a bit ahead of ourselves, but I remember that example, and that helps me try not to make that mistake again.
Yeah, absolutely. And is social media a massive part of your Instagram? Looks great.
Thank you.
Do you find that a lot of traffic comes from there?
Yeah, lots of traffic from Instagram and Facebook and Twitter in particular. I guess all in different ways. We don't do any Instagram advertising, so it's an organic sort of channel for us. And we find that people really like the style of our photography and aesthetic and floristry, and so we do build a large follower base there. Facebook we use more for I guess direct response advertising, and that's been a big part of our growth as well. And then Twitter we use more as a customer delight channel, so a lot of customers choose to contact companies by Twitter, and we try to respond super quickly at all hours of the day and night. And I think that's part of why people think that we have really good customer service.
Now, I would expect that staff management for you is an interesting thing, because for me personally, might get to, say, Valentine's Day, you send some flowers, it might get to, I don't know, a particular time of year where everybody sends flowers, right? So surely you need to manage your staff, you know, accordingly. How do you do that?
We do. We need a lot of additional staff for peaks, especially Mother's Day is our busiest day of the year. So we go about, I guess, building up what we call a seasonal delight team to work alongside our customer delight team, so that we've got enough people on the team to respond to all of our customers' inquiries, because we have a lot more customers at that time of year than at any other time of the year. Mm-hmm. And it's actually helpful. So we start this over Christmas when we need some additional staff. That's already a peak, but it's not the biggest one. So we can bring on board a few people. This gives our permanent customer delight team the ability to, or the experience of training up seasonal delight team members, and they get better at doing this. And then we bring on board more for Valentine's Day, and then more still for Mother's Day. And everybody that's a permanent member of our customer delight team becomes a team lead that's managing a group of seasonal delight team members. And that's really important for managing such a large volume of inquiries that we do get over that period.
Yeah, I mean, it at least you can predict when they're coming. I guess that probably makes it a little bit easier.
Yeah, a little bit.
Has the hot summer really affected your flowers?
Hot summer isn't great for quality. We do change our mixes accordingly. So we have avoided using certain types of stems like spray Veronica, Estantia, which...
straight over my head.
Well, your listeners may know their spray Veronica from their Estrantia, but it's we take it really seriously. We do part of the vase life testing that we do is to understand how flowers will perform in different weather conditions, and then we can adjust our bouquets accordingly to try and avoid using the most sensitive stems. We also put really detailed care instructions in every bouquet, which tell people how to prepare their bouquet on arrival to maximize its vase life.
I was kind of meant to ask at the beginning, is flowers something that you've always been interested in?
It isn't. I didn't know anything about flowers before I started.
It's a big learning curve for you as well.
Huge learning curve. And I'm still, I wouldn't say that I'm like a massive flower expert. We have people on our team that have been florists for many years who understand floristry way better than I do. I've learned a lot about it over the last few years. I guess my goal was to create something that was going to sort of please people and have that positive impact and generate that positive feedback and ability to learn every day, which I mentioned right at the beginning. And the flower space felt like a really natural place to do that, because flowers are something that's sent for emotional reasons, yet people often don't end up getting that positive experience from being senders or recipients.
And maybe let's move into the future. What can the consumer and what can people in the market expect from Bloom and Wild? Would you stay a private company?
Yeah, we'd like to stay a private company. We want to continue with our rapid growth. We've been expanding into hand-tied flowers. We've been expanding into plants and hampers, mainly through the letterbox as well. We have expanded internationally into Germany, France, and Ireland. We're looking at expanding into further countries around Europe over the next couple of years. We also have been doing more and more collaborations with, let's say, other companies, tastemakers. So, for example, we collaborated with Cowshed over Mother's Day. We'd like to do more stuff like that. We think it brings sort of unique creativity to our product and keeps it interesting and different for people. And then a lot of investment in technology and data science to really personalize our customer experience and make it as good as possible for people.
So there's one question that I'm going to ask you now, and I'm not sure, I don't think you're prepared for the answer, but I'll ask it anyway. If you were age 25 and you've got £10,000 in your back pocket, what area of industry or what would you be doing with that money?
I'd have become an entrepreneur earlier. I think often you go to university in this country and the options when you graduate and you go to a careers fair are things like consulting, which I did, or finance, law, a big graduate scheme. I learned a lot from being a consultant for a few years before starting a company, but I also think I was a bit scared to take the plunge. And you sort of worry about, you know, your friends being able to live in a nicer flat than you or go out for meals or whatever, and you not being able to do that because you've got your student loan to pay off, etc. So I think just having that sort of financial pressure taken off would have maybe made me more able to or more willing to take a risk earlier on in my career rather than staying on that sort of conveyor belt that it's so easy to end up on post-university.
And I'm assuming the lifestyle that you live now would have been nowhere near the same as if you'd stayed in the consultancy.
Yeah, I've been really careful for the last few years of parenthood. You know, now 5 years in, I pay myself a decent salary. So it's not sort of like I don't make as many trade-offs as I made at the beginning. And we also have a young child. So my lifestyle is different for other reasons as well. But at the beginning, you know, I paid myself no salary for the first couple of years. And that was definitely a big adjustment.
And that is, did you find that you worked a lot harder when you were an entrepreneur?
Yeah.
Often people say they work longer hours and even harder. And I think people might think, oh, working for yourself, being an entrepreneur, it's easy.
No, it's not easy at all. I do work harder. I still work harder now than I did when I was a consultant. I have, especially as we've got a bit further down the line, I've got a bigger team. I've got a bit more control now over my schedule. So if I want to not work for a day or whatever, then it's sort of more doable. Although, in a way, the work never really stops. So it's hard to just go on holiday for a week because it's not a question of how many days holiday a year I get. The work is still there to be done. It's still my responsibility, whether I'm sort of on holiday or in the office. So it's really difficult to switch off totally in a way that when you work in professional services, you can sort of finish a project and then have a holiday before you start the next project. But the work is really hard, especially right at the beginning when you don't have any cash to hire anybody else. And so you've got to do everything yourself.
Amazing. Well, Aaron, it's been a fantastic talking to you. And it's, you know, it is a very, very exciting company. And like I say, if it's growing that fast, it's amazing. So thank you very much for coming on today for the Business Lives Podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Aaron. Yeah.